Welcome along to Elton and John's La Liga Weekly for the final time in the 2019-20 season that has been going on forever. Congratulations to Granada, who grabbed 7th place in La Liga. Their reward is a first ever European campaign. The downside is that they kick off this afternoon in Kazakhstan and all of their players are leaving. Bad luck to Leganés. Who'd have thought that having your best players stolen would result in relegation? And of course, the referee joined in and did them as well. Well played to the VAR, by the way, who finished the season with a flourish as Getafe lost out on European qualification with 3 disallowed goals. That is the mission, after all. The fewer goals that we get from open play, the better. Barcelona thrashed Alaves 5-0, so everything's fine at the Camp Nou. Nothing to worry about. They even had 2 goalkeepers on the bench. That shows how rich and well-managed the club is, because no one else has 2 goalkeepers on their bench, and Barcelona do. They disappointed their fans by not putting Ter Stegen on in midfield. I guess, though, trolling your own club hierarchy wouldn't have been the best bet in Quique Setién's position. Times have changed, haven't they? Half a generation ago, Spanish players weren't allowed to play properly on the last day of the season if there was nothing to play for. Now they're sweating it out and celebrating goals that are sending other teams down and disqualifying them from European competition. It was an interesting last weekend of the season. Of course, the in a sense, the big one was done in that Real Madrid were already champions. We knew that Leganés were up against it. But Terry, there's a couple of great stories around. Do you want to start with Leganés or do you want to start with Granada?
Granada, it has to be.
Yeah,
I mean, let's start on a good note. I mean, Leganés is we'll come to them later, but Granada, it's I was being asked on, you know, La Liga TV recently who tipped for the position for the Europa League spot, and I wasn't alone. Nobody considered Granada. You know, they were out of the running. It was, is it going to be Villarreal, Real Sociedad, Getafe, Valencia? And all of a sudden, Granada come through, you know, out the chasing pack and take 7th spot with an absolute mauling. Athletic Bilbao were another team that were in consideration for the Europa League. And Granada gave them an absolute mauling on the last day of the season to win 4-0. And it's an incredible story. I mean, 52 points from a group of players that you look at and we didn't know too many. I mean, I'd heard of Puertas before. I'd heard of Fede Vico from many years ago, I think, from a Copa del Rey Cup run where I think Cordoba played Barcelona and he was involved in that. Obviously, we all know Soldado. We know Jesus Villeco, who's gone there on loan from Wolves, but he's not featured heavily. He's only been there since January. So to witness this new group of players that we've seen in this season, you know, the likes of Domingos Duarte, Carlos Neva, Rui Silva in goal, Carlos Fernandez on loan from Sevilla. You know, it's been a joy to watch. And you know, what job Diego Martinez has done. You know, they've been, not only have they been successful, they're good to watch. You know, they play a nice style of football. They're very attack-minded. They've got really hard-working midfield players that have done fantastic jobs from the likes of Yann Ateki and Yangel Herrera. Have been, you know, that's where they've got the youth in the midfield. And, you know, it's astonishing what they've done. I mean, you think about, we mentioned in a recent podcast with Granada and Osasuna, who were a real mess when they both went down in the same season. But both have come flying back to La Liga in great form. And Granada to finish in the Europa League spot. I have my concerns, like you joked in the intro, that the season is going to start early. They have a number of players on loan that have been important. And I'm pretty sure there might be one or two other clubs looking at their manager. So, yeah. You know, but I it was great to see them celebrate, you know, their achievement. I love the fact that on the last day of the season, we still had that sort of episode of players hanging around on a pitch waiting for other games to finish and stuff like that. And that was the case with Granada. They were hanging on. The Real Sociedad had scored. It was like, what's going to happen here? Then they heard that Levante had scored what appeared was going to be the winner against Getafe. And that's when the moment when it all erupted, when they knew that they were going to finish above Bordalás's team. So it was great to see them celebrate. But they're going to have to get some more players, I think.
Yeah, let's talk about those concerns then. So I was obviously exaggerating. I think it's September the 17th that qualifying round 2 starts in the Europa League, and it's a one-off tie against whoever they get drawn against, and it's a draw for home or away. So a bit like the FA Cup in England, you know, look at the draw. How different is Granada going to be next season? Are they going to have to fight to keep Diego Martinez in place? Are they going to go into a campaign with the same number of games, obviously, in La Liga, with potentially a load of Europa League games? Or is that too negative a set of thoughts? Is it going to be fine?
No, I think we can look at it with a negative set of thoughts because of what's happened to Espanyol. Yeah. You know, when they started the European campaign, but that wasn't the only reason Espanyol have been absolutely awful this season. Lost the manager, lost the centre half, lost the centre forward. They didn't make the right choices to bring in replacements. So I think there are lessons to be learned. Carlos Fernandez is key. He's on loan from Sevilla. He looks better than the two Sevilla strikers. At the moment, on the back of this season, I would take Carlos Fernandez over Nesri and Luke de Jong. So that might be, you know, a position where Sevilla think, well, this 24-year-old's been out and played fantastically well this season for Depor last season. And, you know, we need to bring him back in and get him into our squad. So he'll be a big loss. I think Yanateki is also on loan from Sevilla. So there are the issues. Jesus Villeco is on loan from Real Madrid. So and I think there will be bigger clubs looking around and thinking we need a centre back. Dominguez Duarte has been had a fantastic season. They'll be looking at their goalkeeper Rui Silva. So that's going to be the issue. Now, do you make some of those sales and bring in some money and then bolster up the squad with in terms of numbers to help you get through? It's a historic achievement. It's the first time they've ever qualified for European football. So it should be celebrated, but they have to prepare for it. Especially if they get through the qualifier, they get into the group stages, then they're probably going to need another half dozen new players to bring into a squad, because I imagine that some are not going to be there next season. One or two are ageing. Herman Sanchez, the centre-back, is 33. They probably need someone better to go alongside Duarte if they can keep him. But certainly Sanchez would be good to have around the place and to make sure that, you know, he is one of those they can include in the numbers. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be tough, but it's something they should celebrate. It's a phenomenal achievement. It's on a par with Hetafe qualifying last season. You know, for a team to come into the league in the first season and finish on 50, how many points? 52 points? 56 points. It's incredible.
So let's move. Well, the playoff, they've got two rounds to get through. There's a playoff round then. So there's qualifying two, qualifying three, and a playoff round. It's a lot of games, isn't it? And then the groups start October 22nd. And obviously, we've still got this season's Europa League to still be playing. So Inter versus Hetafe. Let's just dwell briefly on Hetafe before we do the rest. I mean, extraordinary game. They've fallen away at the end of the season. You don't want to take too much away from their achievements because over the course of two seasons and the promotion before that, they have made remarkable progress. And they were a desperately unlucky way to not qualify again for European competition.
Oh, they were. I mean, there was 20 minutes added on time in that game, 10 in each half because of VAR. Now, I hate to say it, but most of them were right. The only one that I think is a query is the one where Angel rushes in and gets the follow-up on the goalkeeper, Koke Vegas, who spills a shot. I'm not entirely convinced that the keeper had control of the ball. So that was three disallowed goals for them. One disallowed for Levante, and then Jaime Mata hits the post with a penalty. But I think what we have to consider with Hetafe is, yet again, they finish above other teams like Valencia, Athletic Bilbao, Real Betis. You know, so for Hetafe to... I hope they're not too disappointed. I fear, and that there are rumours linking Bordalas with the Valencia job. I can see that, if I'm being perfectly honest. I could see that he would be a good fit. It's a similar 4-4-2 system he plays at Hetafe, which lends itself well to Valencia, which is pretty much has been their traditional style of play in the last two or three seasons. So I could see that possibly happening. With the fact that Hetafe have failed to qualify for Europe this season, then it may be just the sort of thing that pushes him I wouldn't say rushes him out the door, but he might just think then, has he taken Getafe as far as he possibly could? Is there much more he can achieve at Getafe? Would he be able to, you know, obviously, Valencia's a difficult one, isn't it? Because managers, recent managers, haven't had success. Possibly he won't have the influence he can have at Getafe, but it probably will be tempting for him to go over there with, let's face it, with all due respect, better players, a bigger budget, and playing for a more managing a more historic football club in La Liga. So that might be the fear with Getafe, but I wish them all the best in the, you know, against Inter Milan. They've had a fantastic run so far. And you know what? I fancy against Inter Milan. They'd be really determined now to make something of their season on the back of just missing out on the Europa League again.
So while we're sacking and moving managers around, Unai Emery to Villarreal is the rumour. Guillaume Balague, our friend and colleague, was saying that there's been a sort of gentleman's agreement in place for a while. And then obviously Calleja then has a bit of success at the end of the season and throws that into doubt a little bit. So Villarreal won 4-0 against Eibar last day. They finished fifth. So what do you do if you're in charge of Villarreal now, Terry?
I would imagine, what would I do if I was aware of it? Keep Calleja.
Right, okay.
But I've been critical of him in the past, but I see him more familiar with Villarreal now than we did last season. And I think he's more inclined, although he did tinker around with the tactics against Real Madrid for half a game, which cost them. Cost him in that game. It hasn't cost him in the long run. But he tried to be more defensive. So there's that little bit in him that still wants to make cautious changes. When he changed to the second half, back to the familiar Villarreal style against Real Madrid, they were better. They were good at the weekend. Cazorla and Bruno Soriano. I haven't seen it confirmed, but it does look pretty solid now, doesn't it? That they're both either, you know, in Soriano's case, retiring, which seems a bit of a waste when you fought back after 3 years from injury to play half a dozen games to then call it a day.
He's retiring.
Yeah, and Cazorla's
going to Qatar, isn't he?
Exactly. So I think that's a shame. Two players that they're going to have to replace. But it was telling that it kind of looked to me like the players know what's going on because of the celebrations with the manager after scoring goals lent itself to a team saying goodbye to a couple of players and possibly the coach. So that's an interesting one. There's no doubt in his reputation, Unai Emery. And it's about time Villarreal actually challenged and, you know, genuinely challenged for a trophy. So they've disappointed in Europe all but one season. They've never had a really good run in the Copa del Rey. I don't expect Unai Emery to turn them into a title-chasing team. But I think there's the potential for Villarreal with the good young players that they've got to challenge for trophies still. So I can see the fit with Unai Emery. But it's just a little bit mystifying as to why when you finish fifth and qualify for the Europa League, that you would then make a managerial change. Other than the fact it was agreed a few months ago and they didn't anticipate Villarreal going on this fine run, particularly after the restart, which has seen them climb up the table and finish the season off really strong, which they did against Eibar in the 4-0 win.
So let's turn our attention to the bottom as well, shall we? Well, we're staying away from Barcelona for the time being. We'll do them after the break. Got always stuff to say on Barcelona. But Leganés, they went so close. They got a 2-2 draw against Real Madrid. If a couple of weeks ago, when they started this little unbeaten run, before they started this little unbeaten run, you said that the season would come down to Oscar Rodriguez having a good chance in the 90-whatever minute to win that game against Real Madrid for them to stay up, you'd have said, yeah, go on then, we'll take that gamble, we'll have that. So Aguirre has done a good job in very difficult circumstances. And just nothing, they've been absolutely mud this season, Leganés, Terry. I mean, nothing has gone for them.
No, I mean, it's I feel for them not only, you know, in general, but in the game yesterday. I really do. I think there was a penalty at the end. When Jovic, listen, don't get me wrong, it's not a handball. But it is according to the recent laws of the game that we've seen recently in Spanish football, in La Liga. It hits his arm. Therefore, according to whatever, how everyone else has been punished, it doesn't matter how it hits your arm, why it hits your arm. It hits his arm. It has to be a penalty. Why that wasn't checked and confirmed on VAR by the referee himself, I've no idea. So that's my main grudge about VAR is, why do they sometimes go and check it? Why don't they? You know, offsides I get. That's someone else's job. But when it's a contentious penalty decision, is it handball? Is it not? Why do we see some referees go across and look and make up their own mind? And I just think, according to the laws of the game where all the other teams are being punished, that should have been a penalty to Leganés. I even think the first goal from Real Madrid should have been disallowed. I haven't heard it mentioned too many times, but there's a clear shot by Ramos and Bustinza. It's one that you've always been able to get away with because it's hard for referees to see. It's a tactic. It's something you're taught. When you're being heavily marked, if you can get away with just shoving someone in the opposite direction, and then get a little yard when you move a yard when you move away to attack the cross, you've been able to get away with that in the past. But when you see it on VAR, there's no reason whatsoever for VAR to go, no, actually, just before the set piece, or as the set piece has been taken, there's a clear push, it's a clear foul, disallow. So even yesterday, you know, with the luck has been against them. And yesterday, as I said, I think the first one shouldn't have been disallowed. They should have had a penalty. They give their all. Bustinza played with... He's been playing after being on crutches the day before a game, strapping his ankle up and getting out there and playing. They've had players suspended. I didn't agree with the tactics of Aguirre, where he played... he used the subs to great effect at Athletic Bilbao. I think all four that came on did something. Asale scored, Guerrero scored, Roque Mesa made a goal, Javier Viles made a goal, all four subs. And yesterday he thought it was a good tactic to go with the same plan, play Manu Garrido, the youngster, up front on his own, and in the second half start to bring on the more attacking players. And I kind of feel, despite them getting the equaliser just before half time to make it 1-1, they kind of wasted the first half. And then when he brings on Oscar Rodriguez, who's been out injured a month or so, then you bring on Guerrero, you bring on Asala, you bring on Roque Mesa. It was too late. And of course, they went 2-1 down in the second half early on. But they've been put up a really good fight and were so unlucky. As you said, a couple of half chances. Aviles had a chance as well. Oscar Rodriguez. They were really putting the pressure on. And, you know, it was... It was tough for them. That's what I meant about we then had the Celta players, didn't we, waiting for the end result of Leganés, and Leganés trying to find out how Celta had got on. And just that one more goal would have been an astonishing comeback from Leganés if they'd have survived. And quite frankly, I feel a little bit aggrieved that they didn't get the rub of the green against Real Madrid in that game.
Yeah, and it is a reflection of their season, isn't it? Particularly the Braithwaite loss of their main striker after the transfer window had closed. Just an absolute anomaly. A lot of that was said about it at the time, and it now has transpired that he hasn't been able to help Barcelona particularly, even though they are obviously in a mess in terms of squad depth. But it's been more harmful for Leganés than it has been a boost for Barcelona. But before we leave this relegation battle, Terry, Celta Vigo are a mess, aren't they? All Iago Aspas there with his dead eyes at the end of the game, just thinking, what am I in? You know, because he's the man of Vigo, he's a club legend and all of that. And there must be times he must be thinking, I wish I wasn't a club legend, I could just leave and walk away.
But do you know what? Even his interview after the game, that wasn't one of someone celebrating, you know, success in staying up. His immediate, you know, response to them surviving was, we shouldn't be like this. Mm-hmm. And he made a good point. It's happened to, you know, two or three seasons now. And when you look at them on paper, it's they should be, you know, mid-table. Let's not get carried away and say they should be challenging for Europe. But they should be mid-table. They should be comfortable. They should be like a Levante, you know. They should be playing good, attractive football, finishing off in mid-table, scoring goals. You know, we know they're going to concede more than they probably should. but they have the quality to, you know, to cause Real Madrid and Barcelona and Atletico Madrid problems, particularly at home. But that hasn't been the case this season. And there's you know, it's an ongoing issue with Celta. Good players, they haven't been able to find the right manager. I know Oscar Garcia gets a lot of credit, but he has survived and his team have survived by the skin of their teeth. I mean, they struggled to they didn't get the win against Espanyol, and everybody's beaten. You joked it in the last podcast, everyone's beaten Espanyol. And, you know, you just see them and you look at them on some days, they look particularly good and you think they've got a chance of going on a run, but they don't. They don't win games. You know, it's a big problem. But Aspas won't leave, particularly now they've stayed up again, and he'll continue to keep trying. It's 14 goals, I think, this season, which is a good total for a team that struggled. And he'll be there again next year, leading the line, hoping that, I mean, it's baffling when you look at the players that they've got. You know, they've got so many decent players. They shouldn't be surviving on a stroke of luck, a referee decision on the last day that has gone their way, that has meant they've stayed in the top flight again.
So Leganés are gone, Mallorca we knew were gone already, Espanyol, hopeless case. But they've got, I think Ian was saying, 40 million Euro wage bill, which is 15 million higher than any team in the Segunda ever. And so it's an interesting one to see how they turn it around. One last game with stuff on it yesterday, Terry, that we need to discuss. We'll do Barcelona in a minute. Is Atletico 1, Real Sociedad 1. And so that goal, a slightly weird goal by Januzaj, was hugely important for Real Sociedad because it gets them, as you were saying on the last episode, gets them straight into the group stage, which obviously then, as I say, starts October 22nd, which is a considerable, it's over a month later than Granada, who finished seventh. And in a way, for the football that they played this season, Real Sociedad, I was pleased for them.
I agree. And there was kind of part of me looking at the last few games of the season where the manager, Alguacil, was making some weird changes, almost with a view of, I'm not sure I want us to be in this competition next year in the Europa League. You know, trying experimenting with young players, trying different systems. In the game yesterday, he played Odegaard and Oyarzabal behind William Jose, both of them. He hadn't done that before. In recent games, he's been playing Oyarzabal as the number 10, as opposed to playing him out wide. He's been trying pull two up front with either Isak or William Jose. So it's almost like he's been experimenting. And Zubimendi is a young player that's suddenly become the main holding midfield player at the expense of Zubeldia, who's playing really well. Then they go three at the back, then they play four at the back. And I was thinking, do they really want to... I can see what he's trying to do on one hand, giving young players opportunities. Baron Achea, who's 18, has been playing more, with a view to maybe, you know, finding out about players for next season when they can, you know, another year's progression. We know they're a young squad. They play lovely football. And maybe he was thinking along the lines of, I can see what I've got for next year and we can really push for the Champions League, because they're not a million miles away from that now. You look around, they're solid all over the pitch. And so to see them celebrate, they obviously wanted to get in the Europa League. And his experiments, change of systems, finally got him across the line. I thought it was a great free kick from Januzaj. Whip it into a dangerous area, that type of thing happens. You know, it's bloody difficult to score against Atletico Madrid. You need a little bit of luck. And to go to Atletico in the last day of the season needing something is not an easy task. Atletico have been playing well. We know, even though they qualified in the top four, that they were desperate to finish third. So it was a tough fixture for Real Sociedad. And I agree with you, for their football throughout the season. And when we come back after the suspension of play, they had a chance of Champions League, you know, them and Getafe. So they've faltered a little bit, but managed to get themselves. At the start of the season, if we'd have said that Real Sociedad would finish in sixth, it might have raised one or two eyebrows, but I think they've been great. They've really enhanced La Liga this season. I'm glad that they have got their reward.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll have a look at how Barcelona got on. Yeah, welcome back. So I promised Barcelona, and we promise, of course, Barcelona will be the greatest football team around and all of these things. And a 5-0 away win, of course. Nothing wrong, of course, is there? Everything's perfect, Terry, isn't it? Barcelona on track. They didn't manage to get Marc-André Ter Stegen onto the pitch, as most of their fans who were on social media at the time were desperate to see. But in a way, I've said this before, what Barcelona do still at the moment, despite their obvious flaws as a squad in terms of squad planning, they still turn in a performance every now and again that almost makes you a little bit sad for what they don't do the rest of the time, because you see them at their best and you think they are still magnificent at their best.
So I'm trying to work back now of the games. When they played Villarreal, was that a week ago or 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. No, that was only a week. Yeah.
They were brilliant in that game. Yeah. They were, you know, we were all lauding the fact that eventually, you know, Messi was playing in the number 10 position with Griezmann and Suarez up front. And then I think it was 2 weeks ago. And then all of a sudden, in the space of a couple of weeks, some dreadful performances which see them fall, you know, completely behind Real Madrid, get what they deserve. And then we see them thrash Alaves 5-0 in the last game of the season, which I have to say it reminded me of a testimonial match after the season had ended and a big club going and playing a lower league club, and there was no physicality allowed in the game. I played in them, and occasionally you'd think, oh, I'm pretty good at this football malarkey, or my team are pretty good, we've gone and rolled a team over. It would have been totally different in an FA Cup match in the middle of, you know, in early January, of course, but you would go and play a lower league team, and it was a pleasant evening. No one wanted to get injured. They were grateful for you turning up and, you know, helping out an old veteran player that had been at the club 10 years, and it was a pleasant evening, and you'd win 4-5-0 without anyone kicking you. And that's what it looked like, Alaves against Barca. Alaves got the win against Betis. They've been stressed out for the last 6 weeks. Change of manager. Wasn't sure whether they needed any more points. It's been, Leganés have gone down with 36. Alaves have been on that for quite a while, haven't they? Where they didn't pick up a point and got the three against Betis to get them to 39 and get them safe. And it was just the desire, the intensity, the stress, everything had gone from Alaves. We know they're aggressive normally. Even when they're not very good, they're hard to beat in general, and particularly in their own stadium. And that all disappeared. And it was a stroll for Barcelona. So we didn't learn anything new. We learned maybe Fati is and Riqui Puig should be considered more seriously now as first team players. I think if you look at Fati's performances this year, he's been better than Griezmann. I know he hasn't played as much.
No, you're right.
But it's a fit. You know, we talk about Barcelona having not replacing this player and that player. And Riqui Puig comes in and he looks like a Barcelona midfield player, should look like. You know, he's playing the right passes. He's releasing the ball at the right time. He made a couple of the goals yesterday. So they should be considered now to be more senior, you know, more serious choices for the big games. Araujo did okay at the back as well. But we didn't learn anything new. Jordi Alba had his best game for ages, which slightly irritates me in the fact that it comes in the last game of the season where nothing was writing on it. So I don't know why that is.
Ale sent us a message. We'll do a Q&A shortly for our next pod. Everybody can get everybody back involved with questions. But he did send me a message. He was looking at what you said last week. Ale's point was that, because you said last week that Barcelona might want to look at their defence first. He was saying, well, hang on, what was Valverde about then if it wasn't defence first? And his point was that Barcelona's poor recruitment, which I think is universally acknowledged, means that the players can't withstand top teams with a real pressing kind of blitz and that physicality. And it is sort of backed up, isn't it? When you see a team like Alaves, as you say, play without intensity, Barcelona are really good, which shows you their issue, isn't it? That they can't play against teams that defend ferociously against them and teams that play with an enormous amount of determination.
Yeah, the point I make about Barcelona is too many occasions, even yesterday in that 5-0 win, there were times where they were out, you know, they didn't have enough players back. And in a 5-0 win, Alves still had three or four opportunities in that game to do some damage on the break. That's where the issue has to stop. So it's more of a you can't keep playing the same tactics if you haven't got the players to do it. And we never see Barcelona, for instance, go away from home. It won't have to happen often. And sit back and play deep and play on the counter-attack. Barcelona have not been a counter-attacking team for ages, yet they've got the players to do it. But we don't ever see that side of the game. You know, they flood the attacking half with players. The full-backs play as wingers. And then, you know, the people criticise Busquets for his role this season. But he was better when Barcelona had 80%, at least 80% possession and didn't give the ball away. Now, the possession stats are not as high. He's therefore then having to chase around to win the ball back more. He's then having to chase back towards his own goal because they've given the ball away and teams are hitting them on the break. So there's so many aspects of Barcelona's play that need resolving. And you have to do it with the players you have available. If the players available are Messi, Griezmann, Suarez up front, and they're not going to work hard to win the ball back, then drop off. And that can be done quite easily. Don't go and send Rakitic or Vidal or someone else to do a sort of half-hearted effort in terms of, I'll go and win this on my own. No, because teams will play around you. So just retreat, drop back, let them have it in there in the other half of the pitch. And, you know, we might look at instead being compact as a team, dropping back. We're not asking the front three to go around chasing, closing down. But can you, you know, at least make sure you just drop back into a position where you're goal side, you know, that sort of thing.
And well, then, how much activity do you expect there to be in the transfer market this summer? It's a weird one, isn't it? Because clubs' finances have been thrown up in the air. We don't know exactly what the plan is for when fans are back in and all of that. Florentino Perez says Real Madrid won't be buying. Can't always necessarily believe what clubs tell you, but will Barca be doing the kind of big rebuild? I mean, literally, they can't fill their bench at the moment, which is just extraordinary, isn't it, for Barcelona? So they need to do some business.
Incredible. We have to explain. Yesterday, the three French guys were injured. Griezmann, Titi and Dembele were missing through injury. Piqué, Rakitic and Firpo were suspended. So that's six. But that shouldn't decimate your bench so that you only can have three outfield players as subs, and then Ter Stegen and the young goalkeeper, 19-year-old goalkeeper. I like everyone else, and I saw it. There were goalkeepers. I thought, come on, let's get Ter Stegen on. I wanted to know where he was going to play. And I actually saw Suarez and Messi, I think, when the fifth goal went in, have a word with each other on the halfway line. I was thinking, are they going to come up with a plan where Suarez, you know, just can feel my hamstring a bit just to get to staking on? But it would have made the club it would have made the club look stupid, if I'm being honest. So yes. I think it was, you know, I know it was 5-0. It was the end of the season. There was nothing riding on it, but I think it would have made the club look daft. That it would have drawn more attention to the fact that, you know, their B team were playing in a playoff match. Three of those that started the game yesterday would have been planning that playoff game in normal circumstances.
Yeah.
Because it's important that Barcelona get their young team in the second division. So Fati, Araujo, Ricky Puig would have been playing in that. I think they won 2-1. I always get confused with the playoff system in the lower leagues, but I think they've violated promises 2-1. I don't know. I don't think that gets them automatically in the second division. I still think there's further work to do in other games. But, you know, to have the majority of the games since we've come back playing again, there's always been three or four names on the bench that we don't know too much about. And I think it's numbers at Barcelona. It's signing players that are reliable as well. And maybe, you know, if there's going to be changes, then I think it's clear that there's some players have to be moved on. And I, you know, De Jong came back, which is a boost to them. He's been missing for the whole of since we came back playing again. So they're not a million miles away from it. And when you see them play in that form, when you see Messi on top form, Suarez finishing off the chances, Fatty looks great. You know, there's so much to admire. But in general, this year, they've been training Real Madrid throughout the season. 1 point from the two Clásicos and eventually end up, you know, 5 points adrift. So the table doesn't lie. Real Madrid have been stronger. Zidane has more options, even as quality players he doesn't want to play, doesn't use anymore. Whereas Barcelona haven't got that luxury. So it's a numbers game, I think. You know, Pjanic is coming.
Should loan Gareth Bale next season from Real Madrid. That's the. Well, shall we start that rumour?
I actually thought of that. If Gareth Bale could engineer a free, which are the few clubs that could pay his wages? And I thought, oh, wouldn't that be fun? You know, see, that would liven up a Clásico if they need livening up anyway. But they need numbers, good solid players that, you know, or more the young ones.
Yeah,
let's not forget that that's an option. You know, I'm sure they have quality there, and you know, I mean, they even allowed Carlos Alenia to go out on loan to Betis, which didn't work for him in that transfer.
Should we do Betis?
He would have been useful, wouldn't he, at Barcelona these last few weeks?
Yeah, let's do Betis, shall we? Because we haven't actually discussed Pellegrini's arrival, have we, at length? Because it was rumoured, I think, but last time we talked about Betis, because their end of season has been so inconsequential. And I think you chucked his name in as a good candidate, and I was less convinced because I just think he looks tired. And I think Betis needs someone with energy. So are you staying by your position?
Yeah, I think he's going to have a good, bloody good sleep over the next few weeks and he'll come back refreshed. No, I prefer to think about him, the good seasons he's had. West Ham is a difficult job to manage. It really is. They've had too many changes in recent years. There's been no real sort of transfer system in place where they're building something. But I prefer to think about his days at Villarreal, his days at Malaga, and he's you know, Real Madrid, he was good, and Manchester City. So there's a good body of work there from a manager whose reputation was slightly tarnished by the fact that West Ham struggled when he was in charge there. So I'm hoping that he has the power at Betis. It's not one of those clubs that you think that the power comes from above. You do feel that the manager always has a say in what goes on in terms of building a squad. And I'm hoping that he's going to use his contacts to unearth some gems that we saw originally from, you know, when he was manager of Villarreal. And we had this South American, you know, group of players coming at Villarreal and you know, surprise everybody with how good they were. So if he's refreshed, I agree with you. You know, he's had a spell in China as well. And I'm hoping that that particular club fits with his style. Where he's going to start, I have no idea. Because week by week, we're talking about, you know, Betis, the same problems. Concede too many goals. They look really untidy in defence. They don't ever give any of the strikers too much service. They have a ton of possession, which doesn't get them anywhere. And a lot of very similar players in the midfield area. So I think that it's, you know, it's all well and good buying Carvalho for one reason or another. And, you know, we haven't seen enough of him this season. It's great buying Fekir if you know what you're going to do with him and where he's going to play. So I'm hoping that Pellegrini will come up with those solutions. I always look forward to the bigger clubs in La Liga being good, and Betis have been anything but good this season. So I think when you get those, I mean, Betis beat, you know, Real Madrid at home, you know, just before the suspension of play. That's the type of teams we need to make sure that we you know, Real Madrid and Barcelona, Atletico can't switch off. You know, the more teams like that, the better. We've always known that Valencia is going to be a tough game. Sevilla in the last 10, 15 years is a tough game. Villarreal should be tough. Real Sociedad are tough. Getafe, for different reasons, are tough. And you work all the way down. We want Betis to be in that group, challenging for Europe and being really difficult opponents. And this season, they've only done it on a few occasions, nowhere near enough. The managers haven't been right to motivate them into action. Got off to a poor start and it's just been a dreadful campaign for Real Betis.
We should say a few goodbyes, Terry, as well, just briefly, because I think we've probably reached our limit. But Ever Banega is coming to the end. Zuratutha coming to the end. You've mentioned already Santi Cazorla, Bruno Soriano, but Mona Burgos as well, Simeone's right-hand man. So it's always sad this time of year, isn't it? Some proper La Liga legends and stalwarts there that are coming to the end.
Yeah, and you know, and it's a shame that some of these players, the players that are coming to an end, don't get the send off they deserve. I mean, there's so many reasons. There's so many reasons why we miss supporters being in the stadium. I'm grateful for what we've had, and I'm sure I've mentioned it on the podcast before. If not, I'll say it again. You know, so much credit has to go to everyone that's got this league back on. Credit has to go to the players. I was joking about the Alaves players. It was 33 degrees yesterday against Barcelona. They're playing on a Sunday afternoon in July. It was 38 degrees in Betis on Thursday night. And then you ask 34-year-old Manu Garcia to continue to, you know, come on, let's get up for it. So, you know, to play in those conditions. The game yesterday, the drinks break, which bizarrely we're still having in the Premier League and the FA Cup, when it's a bit chilly actually now. The drinks break at the Alaves-Barcelona game. They all went and got hid in the shade. Ice packs were being applied to the tops of the players' heads on the back of their neck. That's why the drinks break is there, not when it's 58 degrees and it's a bit chilly at Wembley on a Saturday afternoon. So so much credit has to go to the players. And I think it's a real shame that the likes of Zuratutha in particular, you know, he deserved, you know, they make a big thing about it was his last home game the other night. He didn't even get on. There was no point in putting him on. What was the point? You know, the subs in the bench were going to give him a stand innovation. And, you know, if that had been in normal circumstances, he would have gone on with 10 minutes to go and the whole stadium would have erupted and given him a stand innovation. You know, I think it's a real shame that the players that have decided to call it a day this season will miss out on that. Hopefully, and I'm pretty sure that the Spanish clubs are really good at that. They will make some sort of presentation when supporters are back in the stadium, and I'm sure we'll see the likes of Zuratutha and Bruno Soriano back at their stadiums, taking the applause of the supporters that they serve so well over the years.
Yes, and we'll leave it there. So thank you very much for listening. We're not going far, so we won't get too emotional, because we'll be back doing some more podcasts basically through the closed season. Exactly how long the closed season is, we don't yet know. But obviously there are a set of Europa and Champions League games to come that we'll pick up in a couple of weeks' time. So but between then, I think we'll do some Q&A podcasts, so we will be in touch, and we'll have a look at some of the teams of the season as well, which we normally, Terry, we've done traditionally towards the end of the season, haven't we? But obviously it got a bit crazy this time because we were, you know, the games were coming round every 3 or 4 days, and so we haven't had a chance to sort of reflect on some of the best players. So what we'll do, we'll probably use Twitter on that one. We'll get some questions out about the teams of the season. We'll get you doing a little bit of work as well and take some questions. So we'll do a couple of those kind of podcasts.
Even the teams we'll have come up, John.
Sorry, say again?
Even the teams that are newly promoted, we'll have to discuss them in a future one as well. I see Jinji Okazaki is back in Lully. He's back in the top flight, back in big-time football with Huesca. He's been their top scorer this year. They're back up again in Cadiz. So much to talk about in the next few weeks.
Yeah. So we will be back with plenty more podcasts to come very soon. So thank you for listening. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.